listening to the Fantasy Movie League podcast, the free fantasy game for Hollywood. Pick 8 movies for your own fantasy cineplex each week, earn points from real weekend box office results. Compete for free in public leagues or against your friends at fantasymovieleague.com. This is Wednesday, November 2nd, 2016, and it's week 10 of the Fantasy Movie League fall season. I'm Pete Johnson, the Fantasy Movie Leaguer, and I'm joined by Patrick Reardon, the box office guy. And Patrick, how did you celebrate Halloween?
Oh, let's see. A lot of Halloween stuff over the weekend. On Saturday, we went to a friend's wedding, but they decided to like really embrace the Halloween theme. So like the bridal party going down the aisle, and at cocktail hour, they played the themes from Psycho, Nightmare Before Christmas, nice. Halloween, The Exorcist. So that was very cool. And all of the tables at the reception had a theme, be it Bride of Frankenstein or Alien or, you know, anything genre related, there's a good chance there was a table.
Now, was it a costume wedding, or was it just that the theme was Halloween based because of the
formal wedding, but they just decided to kind of, you know, when the date was, just all to right. embrace the Halloween thing a little bit. So that was a lot of fun. On Sunday, I went to go see Danny Elfman and the LA Phil perform The Nightmare Before Christmas at the Hollywood Bowl, which was very cool. And Danny Elfman came out for an encore where he sang Dead Man's Party with a full orchestra just as it started to rain. So you don't get much cooler than that.
How did he sound? Because he's had vocal issues, hasn't he?
You know what? Like during like the Nightmare Before Christmas, which is a lot of spoken word, he was doing that part. Like not quite like hitting the notes that he once did in the Oingo sure. Boingo days, but still sounds pretty good. And again, you can't beat that atmosphere. And let's see, Halloween night, my girlfriend and I and our dog, we had a kind of a Pulp Fiction theme going costume-wise, and we took our neighbor's grandkids out trick-or-treating, so lots of good Halloween stuff.
So now this is why I asked you the question, because I wanted to hit on this. You posted this on Twitter, and I highly recommend everybody go take a look at your Twitter feed after I bullied you into posting this picture. Your dog went as Jules from Pulp Fiction, and I wanted to ask, how difficult was it to find a wig that had the proper amount of curl and matched the coat of your dog's other hair so marvelously?
I mean, it was surprisingly easy because he's a black dog with a white chest, so it already kind of looks like he's wearing a suit. So we didn't have to put him in kind of an uncomfortable costume. Just had to find something, and I think we were at the pet store buying treats or something for one of the animals, and we saw that wig there, and we had been talking about that as a costume, and like, okay, perfect. All he's got to do is wear this on his head, and then it just all came together.
Did you complete the theme by getting him a Royale with cheese?
I realized we were within a walking distance of a McDonald's when we were trick-or-treating, but we did not Royale with cheese it.
Oh, okay. So you didn't, you went far enough that you picked his Halloween costume very much based on how he already looked. And the he does look like he's wearing a coat. I'll give you that.
He's already got some of the costume built in because I don't want to put him in like some giant coat, like packing up his tail. So, and again, he wasn't even that comfortable in the afro. He shook it off after a little while, but enough that we got some good pictures of him.
Well, yeah, the picture you posted is great. It's a great looking dog, and I had to bring attention to it given that he chimes in sometimes on the podcast. Now people have a face to go with the bark in the background. Now my guys, Chihuahuas don't go for costumes at all. They're, in fact, Halloween is not a good night for them. It turns out if you're bred to be a living, breathing intruder detection system, like Halloween is not a good night for you if you're a Chihuahua.
I actually did see a Chihuahua wearing a little ballerina tutu while trick-or-treating. So some of them apparently will do costumes, but I totally get it.
Yeah, mine did not go for that. I spent my Halloween night itself in transportation mode, taking my daughter a couple different places she needed to go. And then we saw multiple over the weekend. She's in a youth theater production of The Addams Family. So we saw that a couple of times.
And I still think they should have cameoed you as Lurch.
No, you know, it's pretty sad if you put in like a 46-year-old guy with a bunch of teenagers and a cast.
You put in plenty of makeup, you've got the height, you've got the voice, you could have pulled it off.
No, there's actually the girl who plays Lurch does a phenomenal job, so.
Well, you can understudy.
Yeah, maybe. Well, let's talk about last week, because interesting week the way it unfolded with a holiday theme, certainly. So I think to no one's surprise, after the theater counts came out on Thursday, what the chatter came to refer to as ADHK took best performer pretty easily. It brought in just over 2.1 million in its 302 theaters, coasting on its way to best performer. But Madea had a pretty good weekend itself there. I know that's going to surprise you because you kind of talked me off of it on the pod last week.
I was surprised just looking at how Tyler Perry, movies always drop about an average of 55%. The one time it didn't, of course, was when there was a holiday theme, but we only had one of those to base it on. I figured Christmas season is always a little wacky in terms of holdovers. I didn't think there's any way Madea was going to hold up that well, and it did, and it cost me a little bit.
So it four screens of Madea, a screen of The Accountant, and three screens of ADHK ended up taking Perfect Cinema. Now only 86 people had it. Now what turned out though, this was interesting. I'm going to refer to this on my column this week a little bit. The most popular was five screens of Jack Reacher, two screens of Keeping Up with the Joneses, and one screen of ADHK. It happened to be the top play off of my model, and it also was the top play if you just took the pro box office forecasts. 945 people played that, and I suspect a lot of people, because it was a busy week because of the weekend, all the weekend holidays, might have just looked at the model or looked at what the lineup calculator had and didn't place a whole lot of thought into the data that we got on Thursday that ended up changing the meaning of some of those things that we saw on Wednesday. So I'm going to talk about that in my column a little bit this week, but I thought it was interesting that that's the one that most people picked. And Jack Reacher, it was not a good weekend for Tom Cruise.
A very possible people just decided I'm just gonna go with the status quo so I don't gain or lose much ground. But Jack Reacher, after that opening weekend, no reason to believe it was gonna have a great hold, especially considering the reviews, and that would have cost people as well.
If you read up in the chatter, a ton of people were talking about the dailies for, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, when those numbers started to come in, the drop, the per theater drop was pretty substantial for Jack Reacher. I ended up still playing it three times. I thought it was going to do better on the weekend than it did. So I played two screens of Boo, three screens of Jack Reacher, and because I had the three screens of ADHK, I wasn't perfect cinema, but that was enough that I moved up a couple of slots. And like we've said on the program before, you don't have to be perfect every week in order to move up in standings. It's, there's a couple of things you kind of have to have the way that the numbers end up breaking out. And in this case, if you had some screens of best performer and you had some screens of Boo, you were good to go, I think, for the week.
And I had neither, so not a great week.
Ouch.
I went all in on Ouija, pretty much.
Yeah, that was another one. I was surprised that the drop, that one didn't do as well. You would have thought the one horror film for a holiday weekend, it would have done well, but not so much.
But it wasn't a devastating. I lost a little bit of ground, but not as bad as I thought.
Now, let's see how that handled the overall standing. So the DZplex still in first place, 765 million, 200, or, yeah, 283,000 and change. Friend of the program, B.S. White, my Zamunda Olympic teammate, is in second with 761 million, 637. So certainly within striking distance. The Garbera Redemption also in striking distance at 760 million, 660,000 and change. Whole bunch of folks in the 750 million range. There's a whole bunch of folks that are settled in there, and even in like the high 740. So with 4 weeks here left in the season, there's still quite a bit of movement that you could have, especially because this week, as we're going to talk about in a minute, probably it's the first time in a long time, and I didn't go back and research it. We're going to have a movie probably go over 50 million.
Oh, we're definitely gonna have a movie go over well over 50 this week.
It's a matter of how much over 50. Now, there's also a new contest. So if you find yourself, if you took some big swings and misses and the overall standings, or maybe in your own private league, things aren't going particularly well for you, there's a new contest that you can take part in that starts this week. So it has to do with a promotion that we have with the film The Edge of 17. So if you go to the chatter, there's a pinned thread on this right now that explains what the contest is. It's a 3 week league that's free to join. There's $50 gift certificates for each of the weekly winners. And if you're the overall winner of this 3 week league, you win a prize pack that has props from the actual film. So that's kind of cool.
Always cool stuff. Again, if you're way out of it and you're like, you know, there's no way I can win anything, this is the contest for you.
Because you can start over right now. Everybody starts at ground zero. So go to the chatter and check that out. It's going to be a lot of fun to keep track of that one. And then there's always, you know, every week I like the brackets. We had Stephen King last week, and then you picked a pretty interesting topic this week.
I'll see. Last week, I was pulling for The Shining, but The Shawshank Redemption beat it. But there's no losers in that one. It was two great movies going against each other. This year, with like, you know, the election, thank God we're less than a week from finally being done with this long national nightmare. But I thought, instead of like the craziness that's going on in a regular election, why not have just kind of a silly one and try and figure out like who is the best movie president of all time?
So who are you pulling for there in this bracket?
I mean, it's a tough one because the left side of the bracket is actors playing actual presidents and the right side is fictional. I mean, they all have a pretty interesting resume. I mean, you look at Air Force One and Independence Day with Bill Pullman. They all did some pretty like unusual presidential stuff. But on the other side, you have Abraham Lincoln. So I think it's probably going to end up being Lincoln and one of those two guys that I just mentioned. And that's really hard to choose from.
Yeah,
it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. I have no idea who's going to win this one.
So I'm looking here. I think it's going to be Lincoln. And as I'm looking at this, at what the current votes are, right now it looks like it's going to be Lincoln versus Harrison Ford. I think it's probably what's going to end up happening. Now, in that fictional bracket, I would have chosen Dave and President Michael Douglas myself. But I don't think those are going to win the way that the votes are looking right now.
I mean, independent, like the man gives a great speech and he gets in a jet and fights actual aliens instead of just sending people off to war. That's going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, I have to admit, Air Force One,
he could have gotten into the pod and like saved himself, but he decides to stay on the plane, battle Russian terrorists and get his entire staff off safely.
Yeah, but the zip line at 30,000 feet, that one always makes me go,
The end does have some of the worst CGI I've ever seen in modern movies.
So, I mean, that's not his fault, obviously, but I mean, he knew it was there in the script, right, when he agreed to it.
But I think just looking at this, I mean, in one of them, it looks like we're going to have like George W. Bush against Richard Nixon. So we'll see who comes out there. So I think Lincoln's going to win the left side of the bracket. And then if it's Pullman and Harrison Ford, no idea which one that way is going to go. We've had Independence Day in previous brackets. It's always a fan favorite. So it will be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, it will. So we're still here in, is our going to be our first full weekend in November. And for our friends over at Loot Crate, that means that we're still in the magical theme here in the November timeframe. So if you go to www.lootcrate.com/FML, sometime between now and November 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific, you can sign up for this month's crate or set of crates, depending upon which one you want to go sign up for. The theme magical is really kind of catering to the idea of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which comes out November 18th. So what the folks at LootCrate.com have done is they've cast this powerful ancient spell to deliver you a 100% exclusive crate featuring bewitching items from Doctor Strange, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and of course the cult classic Big Trouble in Little China that we talked about a couple weeks ago. So if you go to www.lootcrate.com/FML, you enter the code FML, you save 10% off of any new subscription, including the Loot Crate DX or the Animal One or any of those other special crates they have going on. But got to sign up before the 19th.
And if you live in a major city or even if you live in the suburbs, Fantastic Beast marketing is literally everywhere. I think we're going to have a big opening for that one in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think we're going to. And, you know, you asked me last week whether or not I was looking forward to that one. And I asked, my go-to Harry Potter expert is my 14-year-old. And she was not very excited about it, actually, because none of the three of us have read the books. She read, you know, all seven books, and we were way into the movies when they came out. We, you know, holding marathons of previous movies before the new ones came out, and she was Hermione for Halloween one year, and I mean, but yeah, this one she's not as excited about it. I don't know if that's because she kind of aged out of those books before that one came out, or if you know, this one just isn't as compelling given that it's a different set of characters in the same universe.
Will be interesting to see because they've already announced sequels and apparently Johnny Depp makes a cameo in this one and is already signed up for the next one. So Warner Brothers definitely has a lot riding on this movie.
So we'll talk about that one a lot more in a couple more weeks. But we've got the current week. We got some interesting things to discuss. And the one I want to start with, I think we're going to know whether it's going to be playable or not by this time on Thursday. So we're recording this at around 4 p.m. Pacific on Wednesday. And by about this time on Thursday, we're going to know what the theater count is for Moonlight.
Moonlight's been my coma lineup all week, but again, I've been waiting for the theater count. I've got a Doctor Strange and lots of Moonlight, but until I see the theater count, I'm not 100% committed to it.
Yeah, my coma lineup was a Doctor Strange, six screens of Moonlight, and Keeping Up with the Joneses. So Moonlight's getting a ton of great buzz for award season. I mean, it's got the kind of momentum where if you had to speculate at this moment, you probably think it's going to be on the Oscar list because of the expanded Best Picture Oscar list that we now have. But financially speaking, I started a thread on Monday that a whole bunch of people contributed to. That I put some comps out there for other small releases and what did they do in their third week. And all-time great CCR put out some better comps than the ones that I came up with, and Hot Fez put in some comments that leading me to come to the conclusion right now that if it's above 350, it's a no-brainer and you play it. This is one of the easiest weeks in Fantasy Movie League history. If it's below 250, if that theater count is below 250, it becomes much harder to justify it. And in between is kind of gray area. So I think, you know, given the way that the season has gone, it's probably going to be like right at 300 and we're going to have to play some guessing.
I would love to see like well above 300 just to make it easy there, but it's going to be a tough one if it falls into that little window you just mentioned.
Are you on board with that window or would you alter that in any way?
I mean, I would feel so much better if it was just a lot higher. Like, again, if it's in that 350 or above range, I think it's going to make it very easy. But below that, even with the reviews, I mean, it started off on four screens. It made 100 grand, which, again, like, you know, made about 400,000 for 100,000 per screen average, which is good. Expanded to 36 screens the next week and had about 23,000. So I think you definitely need a high screen count because if it just has another, like, if it widens just by like maybe 100 or even like 200 or so, like you just mentioned, they're not going to sustain that pace. And then I think it just doesn't quite make it a viable option.
Yeah. If it falls in that 250 to 350 range, CCR has a great set of comps that many of which are in that second week, about 30 theaters, about a per theater average of 23,000 or 22,000 and change. Almost all of them drop in the 7,000 range, like 7,300 to 7,800. A couple of them retain like $8,500. But given what the pricing is on some of the other movies, my bar for this movie right now, it's got to make like 2.6 million if it's going to be a best performer contender. But like I said, if it's above that 350, it's certainly going to make 7,000 per theater average, and that makes it a no-brainer. So we'll have to see what happens on Thursday to make a final determination on this one.
And I've just checked; it is currently a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. That is 111 fresh, one wow. Rotten. So that's definitely maintaining very well.
You can't please everybody, right? It's got to be the one person.
You see this in brackets sometime where it's like as big of a mismatch as you can imagine, and there's just that one vote on the other side, and you figure it's just somebody trying to be contrarian so they can see where their contribution landed.
Now, the next new release I want to talk about here, this is the same order it's going to appear in my column here this week, is Doctor Strange.
So we're finally getting a big one this fall movie season.
Yeah, so clearly this movie's going to make more, as you said, than $50 million. It's a matter of how much more is it going to make and what do you comp it with, right? So you have a thing where Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it's a character that is not well known to the casual fan. I was always kind of creeped out by this comic book character and the few comics that he appeared in that I read as a kid. He becomes pretty big in the Infinity Wars, or at least the subject of his powers is probably the way to put that, is going to become important in the Infinity Wars to come. It's got an Oscar winner in the starring role. It's got some of his own fan base, although on the chatter there's been some debate as to how big that fan base is. And we have a decent comp here, because 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, Marvel released Thor Dark World on essentially this same weekend. Now that one, you know, the differences are, obviously that one's a sequel, and this one's an original, but you know, certainly compared to Spider-Man or Captain America or Iron Man or arguably even Hulk, like Thor's wasn't as well known of a character, certainly not as obscure as Doctor Strange is. So it has a lot of similarities here. The other similarity in the release strategy is Thor Dark World was released internationally during Halloween week, and then it was released here in the U.S. So similarly, Doctor Strange was released internationally last week, and we're getting it here this week. And ProBoxOffice.com has a report that it's tracking very closely internationally to what Thor Dark World did. Now, in its U.S. debut, Thor Dark World opened at $85.7 million. If you adjust that for 2016 ticket prices, that would be $88.4 million. Its Thursday preview number was $7.2 million. So talk me out of this comp, or do you think that we're all just going to look on Friday morning to see if Doctor Strange does better than $7 million or not? And if it does, we play it, and if it doesn't, we go somewhere else.
I think the two things, like, you know, that people are bringing up against Doctor Strange is it's kind of, like you had mentioned, an unknown character. Even, like, when Iron Man came out, besides comic book fans, I don't think the casual moviegoer knew it. And I would say ditto for Thor, Captain America, and especially for Ant-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy. So I think if you take out the sequels and the Avengers movies, like when Marvel in this cinematic universe, when they introduce a new character, those movies average 72.7 million, and that's not adjusted for inflation, so it's probably a little bit higher. And you mentioned, like, you know, this one is like following the Thor pattern, so it's not in the comfortable like summer movie season, but there is a precedent for it. And I think this is a marketplace right now where there's so many sequels and reboots that have just been like striking out left and right. The fact that this is an original title and it has the Marvel seal of approval, and we know we're going to be seeing this character in future movies and like all kinds of crossovers for years to come, I like its prospects here. I think, you know, I had it in the low 80s, so I wouldn't be shocked if it went even higher. I think it has a pretty high ceiling. I like it. I like it as my anchor because I trust it more than the other movies coming out this week.
Yeah, I kind of do too. I mean, there's something wrong with every movie that we're going to talk about here in the week 10 part of this podcast. I mean, we talked about the theater count issues for Moonlight. You know, this one, because of the obscurity of the character, are people really going to come out to see this because it's not... You know, it's like you said, introducing a new character. There's problems with others. But the more I play this game, the more I trust who's the distributor. And the Disney marketing machine means a lot to me. I could end up getting fooled by that. I mean, there's some people in the chat are talking about it coming in like the mid to low 70s. I'd be shocked if it's not in the high 70s. And it, because it's an MCU movie, I think it has a chance to do better. I mean,
and as of right now, we're recording this, like 91% Rotten Tomatoes, right. And I've been like on Twitter throughout the week, like by all, it appears by all accounts, like, you know, the people who have seen it, the fanboys, the bloggers, they all say it's very good and that people are excited about the movie. So I think that bodes well for its prospects.
Now, if the Moonlight scenario doesn't play out, so if it's below 250, its theater count is below 250, or you just, for whatever reason, you don't believe in Moonlight, pairing this one, because it's so expensive, is a little tough this week. And it's going to play down a lot to what happens with theater counts again on Thursday, because we've got well over 10,000 theaters that are getting new releases from these three new releases that we have. So that means some of these holdovers are completely getting kicked out, and which ones are going to retain audience. The one I like, as we're sitting here right now before we know that theater count, I kind of like Ouija because it had an unexpectedly bad week last week and it still only dropped 49%. So Doctor Strange works with, you can pair it with three screens of Ouija, three screens of Deepwater Horizon, which is at the low end of the price curve. And there's one other mid-level filler you can put in there. Either Girl on the Train fits, And Miss Peregrine fits in there too.
And I was also looking at the possibility of playing two screens of The Accountant with Doctor Strange. Again, decent opening for The Accountant, only dropped 45% in week two, only dropped 38% in week three, and each week it had some pretty direct competition. Its first weekend, Jack Reacher came out. Last weekend, like the debut of Inferno, I thought it was going to take more audience away from that, but The Accountant held up pretty well. So I think if you're going with Doctor Strange and the Moonlight screen count is low, I don't hate two screens of The Accountant.
Okay, that one's interesting. See, I'm it's we have four movies now that are male white star and like action explosion running from things. And
That
I
we
just
do. That's why I thought The Accountant was going to fade a lot faster. But each week,
Yeah, it hasn't.
thanks, it took its shots pretty well.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see the attraction to The Accountant on that. But again, see, and there's my dogs protecting me, I think, from the UPS man right now. So that takes you. Those are a couple different ways you'd go with Doctor Strange. So which are other two do you want to talk about next? Because both of them have potential issues.
Why don't we start with those animated trolls?
I do not understand this movie at all. I
I
mean.
don't get it. Again, it feels like it's skewing so young, so often, like animated seems like it's always going to be a safe play. I get a little bit of a Storks vibe from this movie.
You do? See,
In the
because.
sense that it feels like it's going to skew too young, and there's so many other options for parents out there. Like,
Yeah,
I
I see what you're
just think
saying.
I think it's going to underwhelm.
What was the comp that you've been using for this one?
I was looking at, like, I was doing research for my column. There were three DreamWorks movies kind of in this early November window. It was Megamind, B Movie, and Flushed Away. Megamind did 46, B Movie 38, Flushed Away 18.8. I think it's going to be, I have it in the low 30s, but I see the floor being a little bit lower than that. That's where the Storks vibe comes in.
Okay, I see that. See, the one that I'm a little bit drawn to here, the DreamWorks movies are interesting, right? Because they changed distributors a couple years ago. So can you compare the Paramount distributed DreamWorks movies to the Fox distributed DreamWorks movies? Maybe I'm playing too
I
much
think
into
it's
that.
I think it's comparable because, and like once you get out of Disney and then what Universal has done with Illumination, I don't think there's a huge difference between Fox and Paramount. Like in that realm, Fox has a little more experience just with the Blue Sky movies, so that might help a little bit, but it's not enough to really move the needle for me entirely.
Okay, well, maybe I'm making too much of that, but if you buy into that thought, Penguins of Madagascar got released in 2014, albeit over Thanksgiving weekend, and it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If you adjust for ticket price, was still only a per theater average of 7,000. If you apply that 7,000 to this very big screen count or the very big theater count that we're getting for Trolls, you get like 28.4 million. Now there are those out in the forums though that are saying that hey, it's been forever since we've had a kids movie. People are waiting to get a new kids movie, and they're talking about maybe it getting as high as the mid 30s. I mean, if you like it at the mid 30s, and we're going to have some Thursday data on this to help draw some conclusion, you can play it twice. And then again, I still kind of like Ouija. You can play it with four or five screens of Ouija, or you can even play it with two screens of Hacksaw Ridge and four screens of Keeping Up with the Joneses.
Got it. And the reason I mentioned those movies as comps earlier with Megamind, B Movie, Flushed Away, not just DreamWorks, because those were original DreamWorks properties. There's been more successful animated movies, but they're usually a sequel or some sort of pre-sold property, like the Peanuts movie was last year.
Right.
I don't know. You tell me. Like, was your child ever into Trolls and
No.
or any? I don't know anybody who was. Apparently, it was a thing. Like, I don't remember it being that big of a pop culture phenomenon, which is another big reason. Like, I just don't get this movie. It doesn't seem special. It feels like it's just going to be like a family placeholder until Fantastic Beasts and Moana come out later this month. I just don't really believe in it.
Yeah, I can't say I do either, but it certainly has its defenders in the forums. But yeah, not something I'm getting super excited about. But if you do, and I misspoke a moment ago, you can play it with two screens of Trolls with the screen of Hacksaw Ridge, and you can go five screens of Ouija if you happen to like that one, or you can go to the lineup calculator and play around with a couple other potential possibilities there. Well, let's...
Could be.
No, go ahead.
I know, could be, but again, this feels like the week that Deadpool came out for me, when Deadpool was obviously going to win, but it was priced in such a way, much like the way Doctor Strange is this week, where, like, you know, maybe you can, like, mix and match and, like, you know, try and beat it and chase the bonus. It just feels like Doctor Strange is going to be way above, and I'm just not going to get cute with Trolls and other combinations this week. It's kind of where my head's at.
Right. No, I hear you. So let's talk about Mel Gibson.
Which aspect of Mel Gibson? That's coming out this week, I think we can cover it. If we get into his personal life and like the PR nightmares, I don't think we have enough time on this podcast.
Yeah, whichever one you want to go for.
Why don't we just keep it easy with Hacksaw Ridge?
All right. So this is another one, right? It's getting some really good reviews.
The reviews have been excellent, and surprisingly, the marketing is not shying away from it. They are really leading with, you know, from Mel Gibson, the director of The Passion of the Christ and Apocalypto and Braveheart. So they're not shying away from it. They're definitely selling this as a Mel Gibson movie.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Did you happen to see the Colbert interview?
I heard that. Was this the one where he wrote a letter to his younger self?
I guess I only saw the beginning of the... I heard that he was very sort of self-sacrificing. And then like the 8-minute part that I saw, he was a little uncomfortable. But I mean, he did discuss his most famous incident, and Colbert kind of gave him a break and basically said that nobody should be defined by whatever their worst moment is, and his happened to be recorded. And obviously he said some super hateful and dismissive things, but it seems as though the Hollywood community has forgiven him. I'm not so sure about the general public.
To an extent, and I also think, like, this is just where he's the director, he does not appear on camera. I don't think the Mel Gibson thing is the movie's biggest obstacle. I think it's the, we're going to the distributor thing again here. Like, I think Lionsgate is the biggest problem that this film has to overcome.
Oh, yeah?
Because I was doing a little bit of research, just, like, looking at, like, the biggest opening for Lionsgate's, and of all the films in their history, like, I think, at what number do you think this movie needs to be viable?
Like 13?
I use 12 as the cutoff here. And then throughout the history of Lionsgate, they've had 63 movies open up to $12 million or more. And if you look at those 63, you've got a lot of young adult. You've got your Hunger Games, your Twilights, your Divergents, tons of horror movies with Saw. You have a lot of Tyler Perry. What you don't see is... you don't see a single prestige pick. You don't see any like legitimate awards contenders. You definitely don't see any World War II movies or really anything period. Like, this is just not the type of movie that I think they know how to release or market properly. So even with the reviews, I think it might have a decent long run, but I have a hard time seeing it get off to a fast start this weekend.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure what to make of it, especially just in light of how his career, I mean, it was pointed out his career wasn't exactly going well 10 years ago when he had his despicable incident, and then he disappeared for 10 years, and now he's trying to rehab that public image, and yeah, I don't know how that all plays out.
It should be interesting to find, but I think once you get outside the bubbles of, like, you know, especially like, you know, the city we live in the general area, I don't think casual moviegoers usually base their decisions on who actually directed it. And I don't think that's the biggest hurdle. I think, like, it's more of a Lionsgate thing, and there's a lot of competition out there. So just like a big, violent, like, even though it's about a conscientious objector, it's definitely like a bloody, violent World War II movie. I think it's going to have a hard time like this weekend, but the reviews have been very good. If it can stick around and get some award nominations, it might be good in the long run, but I just don't see a fast start.
Now, while we've been recording, ProBoxOffice.com put out their weekend forecast. Do you want to hear some numbers now, given that we've talked about these movies?
Oh, I'm pulling them up, but yes, fire away.
So they don't have anything for Moonlight. And the lowest movie that they have on their forecast is Miss Peregrine at 2.4. So they don't, at least they don't have any, they don't have any advanced knowledge that it has, that Moonlight is coming in on that more than 350, I would think, or else they would probably have like a 2.6 number here. You know, it would show up on their top 10 forecast if they did.
Probably, and I'm also on Box Office Mojo, still no screen count yet, okay. So it'll be interesting to monitor. So again, if that Moonlight is in that 350 or higher, I definitely like it, just based on like the overwhelmingly positive reviews. If not, you got to do a lot of mixing and matching, but I definitely like Doctor Strange as my anchor.
Well, so they're saying, so they're holding on Doctor Strange at 88 million, which is interesting, but they've come up on Trolls. They're now saying 39.5 for Trolls. No. That seems astronomical to me.
That still feels high to me.
So they're, you know, part of their pros on it is the Timberlake on the soundtrack. You think that moves the needle for this demographic though?
I think back when people actually bought records and like physical albums, like the soundtrack can make a little bit of a difference here. I think those days are long gone, and the song from that movie's actually been out for months and months and months. Yeah. I think it's already peaked.
Well, it looks like, and they've got Hacksaw Ridge at like 12.5. And I didn't put in the exact numbers, but best I could with the sliders here while we were talking. The lineup calculator is telling me two screens of Trolls, one screen of Hacksaw Ridge, two screens of The Accountant, and three screens of Ouija is what the lineup calculator is currently telling me. That, but again, if you don't believe that 39 for Trolls, if I bring Trolls down to like 35, then Doctor Strange becomes best performer, and you're looking at Doctor Strange, two screens of The Accountant, and at least the lineup calculator right now is saying two screens of Storks, which seems counterintuitive on a weekend where it's got some real competition, and three screens of Deepwater Horizon. So when I run the model a little bit later this evening and update this, I think you're pretty safe in saying that if you think Doctor Strange is really going to hold at 88, then Trolls beats it at 39. Trolls would have to get to, let me do the math here real quick. Yeah, Trolls has to get to, if Doctor Strange at 88 million, Trolls has to get to 36 million.
All right, interesting. I had Trolls in the lower 30s. At best, I like that number for like Doctor Strange has not changed very much. Like, I think that's a good omen.
So they've got, Pro Box Office has The Accountant at about a 41% drop or so, and they've got Ouija at like a 50% drop or so. So those are looking like your good filler candidates here, given what this Pro Box Office estimate's telling us. That Trolls seems awfully high. I haven't heard anybody talking about 39. I mean, people have been talking about mid-30s for that, but certainly not that high.
And I got to go back and look at what the long range or what the pro forecast was for Storks, just because I remember that was being, I thought that was really high as well. I don't remember what the exact number was off the top of my head.
Okay, so I actually know that. So if you go to, that was fall week four is when that debuted. So if you go to the LRF portion of analyzer.fmlnerd.com/LRF and you go and jump to week four of the fall season, Storks had, for a long time, it had an opening long-range forecast of 21 million. That jumped up to 33 million, and finally, Pro Box Office's weekend forecast for Storks was 36.5, and its actual was 21.3.
Okay, that's exactly the numbers I needed to make me feel better.
I still think they're high. I mean, I can see you making the argument for 35. I find it really hard to see the argument for 39 on Trolls.
Agree. It just feels like Doctor Strange is going to own this weekend.
But still, even if Doctor Strange is at 88, Trolls beats it at 36. So that's the weighing you have to do. And the Thursday preview numbers we're going to get on Friday morning are going to tell us a little bit about that. Now the Doctor Strange one, That's easy because we've got the Thor as the comp. I'm going to put in my article that the comp that, again, if you stick with that Penguins of Madagascar, that one didn't actually have Thursday number. So yeah, I don't have a good Thursday number for Trolls here. You have any guidance there, or we're gonna trust some people in the chat?
I have a hard time trusting kids' movies, especially one that's gonna skew this young. So I think it's really a question of, is Doctor Strange within that number of Thor: The Dark World, or is it significantly below? Then right. You've got a tough decision to make. Hopefully, the toughest decision I have to make with my lineup is Moonlight or Two of the Accountant and some filler. Which once we get the accurate screen counts, we'll have a pretty good idea
about that. Okay, so I think we got some good guidance this week. As always, I guess we'll see how it plays out. That'll do it here for Week 10 of the Fantasy Movie League fall season. Now, as always, you can find me on Twitter at NerdGuru. And Patrick, how about yourself?
You can always find me on Twitter at the Box Office Guy, and there's a very good chance that the world is going to end because the Cubs are playing in a matter of minutes to try and win the World Series. So go Cubs, go.
Yeah, Cubs, Indians, one of them has to win, right?
Something's got to give. Somebody's going to be tortured. Somebody's going to get off the schneid permanently.
And you owe it to yourself to go to Patrick's Twitter account and see this picture of his very nice looking dog. Kind of looks like he wants to give you a big lick just looking at you. But as always, you can find Fantasy Movie League gear at fantasymovieleagueshop.com. You can find official news from the league on Twitter at FML_movies. You can find us on Facebook or on iTunes by doing a search for Fantasy Movie League. Until next week, everybody, good luck.
This has been the Fantasy Movie League podcast. Come join us and play for free in public leagues or against your friends at fantasymovieleague.com.